for Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 17th of April. Another deep dive as we wait to get Game 2 underway. Can Quinn and the Jazz come up with any answers? And is there any track record of answers to the Rockets? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, all sorts of geeky numbers, and taking you and getting you ready for tonight's 7:30 tip-off of game number 2 of the Jazz and the Rockets. I am the radio voice of the team, Jazz NBA Insider. This is your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. If you're new, we give it to you every day. Thanks for tuning in. Tell some friends about it so that they know what's going on as well. All right, let me update you just on a few things. So yesterday the Jazz went and practiced on the Rockets practice facility court inside the Toyota Center. The day before, they went through kind of an hour-long film session and went through all the things. And then yesterday, they got out on the court, had a little film session beforehand, got out on the court. They started with defensive adjustments, then worked to the offensive side and what those adjustments would be. Ran up and down a little bit, not a huge amount of on-floor work. Nothing like what they did in the days between when they actually had, like, literally scout team, Rocket scout teams. But tried to get a feel for what their adjustments are going to be. They'll do that again today at an 11 a.m. shoot-around at the Toyota Center, where they'll go through, you know, some of the specific aspects of what they want to do, where they want to be on the floor, how they want to adjust defensively, and what they want to do offensively. Let's dig into each of those for a second and just see if we can understand things a little bit. Let's start with the offense. So the offense in the half court the other night averaged 83.3 points in the half court. That's not great. And we were in the half court a lot. We did not get out and run very much. We were in the half court about 85% of our possessions, which is high. This is a continuation of a trend against the Rockets in each of the last three games we've played them. Earlier this year, we had two half court games against them that were in the 50th percentile. They weren't better than that. They were 50th percentile offensive games. In the game where we blew them out, where I think they were disinterested, probably not the greatest sample, the second game, we killed them in transition. We're in transition 23% of the time, which is a lot, and we averaged 1.75 points per possession. I believe, if I remember correctly, they were in a back-to-back, and so we really ran it up their throats, got out in possession a great deal. Interestingly, last night, or game one, we actually had pretty good transition luck. Our transition game was actually half decent. It was in the 61st percentile of all half court offenses or transition offenses. We just didn't do it very often, partially because they're pulling the ball out of, when you're pulling the ball out of the net, it's really hard to get in transition. So this all works as a cycle here, in the sense that the Jazz did not have a great defensive game either on that night. They did not have as terrible a defensive game as it's being made sound, but they did not have a very good one while the game mattered. What's interesting here now is it's, you know, you're trying to combat a historically great offensive team. And as the Jazz try to combat a historically great offensive team, they've yet to have a game against this team where their offense is better than the 50th percentile in the half court. Nor do I know if I think the Jazz offense will be better than the Rockets, than against the Rockets. I mean, we're not a great half court offensive team. And so this is where this matchup particularly gets tricky. Now the positives are we had a really terrible shooting night, but we did get 47% of our shots at the rim and 14% of our shots as corner threes, and 71% of our shots were smart shots. So, or excuse me, 79%. So that's really high. So that's good, right? That's, at least they're not blowing up our shot distribution. We just didn't shoot it well. That's the hope. Really what it's coming down to is that this team's going to get shots and make them. That's, I know it sounds so simplistic, but honestly, it's kind of the only hope at this point. Is that somehow the shots, guys are going to get the same shots they got the previous game, which was our, generally about our league average of, shot distribution, and which is the best in the league, and make them. Now, the tricky thing is how they were able to distribute our 3-point shots. So if you kind of break our team into good versus not as good 3-point shooters, I think our good 3-point shooters are probably Ingles, Korver, and Cephalosha. Royce is a high percentage 3-point shooter, but I'm not sure he's one that we think of as a really good 3-point shooter. And then obviously Favors, Crowder, Rubio are less good. Favors was 0 for 1 from 3. Ingles was 1 for 3. So Rubio was 1 for 3. That's kind of what he's going to be. Crowder was 1 of 7. Royce was 0 of 2. Taba was 1 of 4. We were 7 of 27 from 3. Looking back at the games against the Rockets, it does feel as though we can get the looks, but we're 22 of our last 100 on above the break threes. And so we've got to knock down that shot. And they are clearly to somewhat choosing who gets that shot. I showed it yesterday on Locked On Jazz, on Locked On Sports, that on Twitter, that, you know, the other aspect of this is, like, Donovan is just not getting a lot of space. And so it's really, so is Donovan going to have to start pulling up for the 18-footer to get himself going, play a little bit in the mid-range? I think that's a possibility for him. You know, he got 7 threes off. He hit 3 of 7, frankly. He did miss some good looks, but you're not going to make 50% of them. The other one is that as Donovan makes his decision of when to get off the ball as they crowd him, he probably has to do that before at 6'2" or 6'3". He has to do that before he gets into the teeth of the defense. But that's, to me, what I look at this is, all right, there were some aspects offensively where it was just a terrible shooting night. And so, maybe the comfort of feeling their switching, seeing their switching, experiencing it, understanding that, frankly, one of the keys to what they do now is that they don't switch every possession, and you have to try to recognize as you come down the floor whether what their defense looks like is one that's going to switch or not. It's pretty subtle. And then react from there. We'll see. Tabo is questionable with hip soreness, so that could mean George Niang, which... Tabo's been really good to us. That's actually, Tabo's been very good. He's a better rebounder than Jay. We've got to rebound well. He's a better rebounder than George. So that's a little bit of a bump in the road if Tabo can't go, for the Jazz. You know, if you just look at their rebounding stats for the year overall, Tabo's been better. The other first game, Jay was better. He had 17% of the defensive rebounds when he was out there. The other one is we've got to get, because the half-court offense, here's our 5 half-court ratings against the Rockets this year. Remember, in the half-court, you're not as efficient as you are overall, but the league average in the half-court's about 95 points per 100 possessions. 83 the other night, 59, 79, 95, 95. So 2 games right at average. Problem is average, unless you have a great transition game, is not beating the Rockets because they're not going to be anywhere near average. So we've got to have some sort of offensive rebounding putback game. Rudy Gobert had 7 offensive rebounds the other night. The rest of the team had 2. I don't know how much you want to crash because you don't really want them in transition. They don't play a lot of transition anymore, but they do do a pretty good job of finding Eric Gordon, particularly in that early transition in the high quadrant three. He got us on it early in the game, and so you've got to keep an eye out on that in a lot of ways. All right, we'll look at defense. And an interesting contrast in these two coaches who are both brilliant. As well as we continue today on the show. Today's show is brought to you by the store 6200 South 20th East. That is the home of the great Mudslide Cookie. I got a text or email the other day from a listener. I tried the Mudslide Cookie. He didn't say another word. Like, I think he was in such utter bliss from the great Mudslide Cookie that he didn't even tell me more. It's just implied that it's the best cookie in the world. There's also now the Leatherby's Locked On Mudslide Ice Cream, which is, of course, the ice cream we create. Super excited about that. So please go grab it. There's also a caramel and vanilla swirl, which is the Loch Ness Monster ice cream, I think, is what it's called. And that is super good with Mudslide Cookies in it as well. The store is a lot more than Mudslide Cookies. A great meat section in the back. The butchers are back there. If you kind of sneak into the produce section, you can see them cutting up their salsa in the back and giving you that feel. And then most of all, it's that community feel. That's what the store is all about. It's Jeff and Scott and their family building a grocery store that accentuates the local products and, lets the, you know, local companies get their opportunity to be shown, whether it's June pie or the great tortilla chips. And then it's that local feel. It's the high school kids taking the groceries outside like it was, like it once was when the community is there for you. And that's what's taking place, at 6200 South and 20th East at the store. The defensive aspect of things. The biggest thing I think that the Jazz have to deal with is that the Rockets got the most corner threes of any team all year against the Jazz. You might decide as a game plan that that's okay just because of Harden and Capella, but it's so fundamentally contrary to who we are and what we have done as a franchise all year long that I think, I think it's almost weird on the guys. And I'm not sure it was totally, I understand why it happened. And I think, you know, it was a case of trying to take away those other items. And I think that when that happens, you know, that was the, you were trying to get into Capella's legs and you were giving up the corner three. We'll see whether or not, they can adjust and take that away a little bit. The risk is then you give a bunch of high quadrant threes, which is probably, not as bad, but it's Eric Gordon. And this is why this is, you know, you're trying to build a defense to stop a historically great defensive team. I mean, offensive team. All right, I have to share something. This is pretty funny. So outside my window at my hotel, I'm looking out over a freeway, and then there's a nice restaurant down here. And there's a big, huge open parking lot to the right side, and I'm really just looking over this huge parking lot. And I have no idea what happened, but 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 minivans just drove in. All parked one after another, like if it was another type of car, you would have seriously thought there was an invasion going on. Most of the people are wearing black pants and blue shirts. I don't know if these are like the employees that all rent the same car and arrive for the day to work at the restaurant, which seems weird, or if it's some convention that's going on, or what. But literally a line of 12 minivans just drove in and parked one after another facing the same direction. It was like the invasion. Anyway, I just had to share that. It had distracted me because that's what happens with my brain. But it also was, I don't know if I'm portraying this. It was really one of the more unusual settings you've seen of 12 minivans just in a line pulling in one after another after another. Maybe it's a car auction. I don't know. There's some woman with a clipboard going back and walking behind each one of them. All right. Well, I'll update you on this group of blue-shirted, black-pantsed, backpack-wearing, some of them, people, and where they're all heading. But they all are heading somewhere in big minivans. All right, back to the Rockets. It's more fun to talk about minivans because there's actually maybe an answer. When you look at what you're trying to do on Harden, the idea that you could just let Harden go off, I think, is and try to guard him straight up and let him go, I'm not sure there's an answer there. Spurs actually force him left, looking into kind of how other teams guard him. So I don't, you know, nobody has figured it out. The guy is having the greatest single offensive season that we've ever seen. And in turn, you try some pretty crazy stuff. And the idea of the very aggressive force right was take away the cutback three. Don't allow him to shoot threes and don't foul him. You know, it kind of worked. But, I mean, this is a guy who's averaging 36 a game. You held him close to 8-9 points below. He leads the league in three-pointers made, field goals made, free throws made. There's just this whole element of everything to him that I don't know that there's a good answer. I just don't have it. I actually think forcing right, the previous two matchups, we got up on his body, we jammed him hard physically to his right side. He was able to get his push off to get his step back on that, and he went to the line 16, 17 times. So I think you got to guard him, but I do think you got to get him right, and I do think the defense has to know where he's coming from. And I think then you figure out how you're going to rotate out of that. The only note of interest there is if you go back and look, you know, this is now three in a row or two in a row. So the Jazz held the Rockets to 86 points in the half court in the third matchup this year, which is better. The second one last was 100 and last night was 107 points in the half court. So that was not successful. The other two were not as unsuccessful, but they were not great. So that's the tricky part about this. All right. I think there's an interesting contrast between these coaches. And I want to get into that a little bit. Mike D'Antoni's backstory is pretty fascinating. He's a great college player. He goes pro and he gets a coach, who the coach basically, I wouldn't want to say, I guess belittles him, makes him feel, you know, takes away his confidence. And as he kind of plays under him, loses more and more and more, confidence as he's developing as a player. He ends up, because of this, leaving the NBA and going to Italy. And the story is when he gets to Italy, that his first coach tells him, he went to Marshall University out of West Virginia. I mean, this was a pretty good player. This was the 20th overall pick of the draft. And he spent from 73 to 77 in the NBA. And somewhere along the way in Kansas City, he shoots about 26%. And as he is developing, and as he goes to Italy finally and decides, all right, I'm going to play in Italy. And you know, the coach he gets tells him, I'm only going to have you I'm only going to have you if you shoot 16 times a night. And his first game out, Mike shoots like 1 of 11. And as he's 1 of 11, he you know, he stops shooting. And the coach comes into him afterwards, calls him in the office, says, if you ever do that again, you're not playing for me. And Mike's thinking, well, I want 1 for 11, coach, I'm sorry. And he's like, no, I told you to take 16 shots. If you don't take 16 shots at my point guard position, you don't play for me. So evidently the next game, Mike, you know, hits, took 16 shots, and however it progresses, it isn't entirely clear. But he becomes the all-time scoring leader in Italy because he's given this freedom. He's been given this kind of release of anxiety. And that's the premise by who he is as a coach. Think less, play free, play open, go to work. And then his brilliance is this understanding of spacing. I mean, he's really the guy who changed how the NBA viewed spacing when he came back and coached in Phoenix with Steve Nash. And so you have this, I think, interesting guy in the sense that that's kind of the core of who he is, which is this. I once asked him, like, how do you get your teams to run? And obviously this team doesn't run, but he says, I make them think less. If you think about where you have to be and what you have to do, then you're not going to be able to run. But if you just don't think and run and get out there, you'll be all right. So that's the contrast. The contrast is to Quinn. And Quinn is this JD MBA out of Duke who, you know, is incredibly brilliant, who interviewed for jobs on the corporate world and probably would have had an amazing career there and is, you know, kind of the mad scientist, and our team definitely thinks, and you better love the game if you play for him, and he maximizes players' weaknesses. You know, like, if you've got, you know, Mike gets guys, you know, gets them to be able to just play and do, you know, Gerald Green and things like that, who probably, you know, don't have certain skill sets to play for Quinn. You know, I don't know if he's a great handler, a great passer. On the other hand, Quinn gets guys that probably couldn't play for Mike, and it gets them to be pretty darn successful. And it's a pretty interesting kind of contrast, I think, in how these two teams approach things and the way it goes. You know, I think that Quinn would, with James Harden, would probably run a different system than he does, you know, right now or with Chris Paul. They have some depth to their offensive games that we don't have anybody who has that kind of depth yet in their offensive games, and we don't have multiple ones. But it's still, I find, a pretty interesting contrast between the two. Shamrock Auto Group is located in Pleasant Grove, and I had a good time with Rob the other day. Rob Taylor is the owner. He hired Brady Kimball, who is a longtime technician, to go out and make sure he gets the perfect cars. For all I know, that's what's going on here with all these minivans. It kind of looks like it's a bunch of car dealers looking at cars. And what Rob, you know, prides himself on is this lean experience that they've built that gives you this in and out easy experience in all of his 5-star reviews. The coolest thing to me when Rob tells stories about Shamrock Auto are the people who from out of state have gone to him before and now call him up and say, hey, I'm looking for this type of car. Can you go get it? And they do. People from out of state are coming all the time. No drama, no hassle, great pricing. All sorts of Utah County assault vehicles available. Most of his cars are 6 to 12 months old and 5 to 20,000 miles. Suburbans, Yukons, big SUVs, Expeditions, minivans, all there for you. The reviews are amazing. Lizzie Tomlinson, we love Shamrock Auto. We just purchased our second vehicle from them. Both experiences were great. Friendly, straightforward salesmen who don't push you into anything or play the sales game. Great inventory and fair prices. It's the Shamrock Auto Group. Go say hi to Rob. He's out in Pleasant Grove. You can call Rob at 801-319-2250. That's 801-319-2250. Tell him you would Locked On Jazz and get your lifetime cooler from a Utah company that makes great coolers as well. That's Rob at 801-319-2250 and Shamrock Auto. Last night, some interesting game. I just got a text from a friend who said, hey, I think you guys can hear that, unfortunately, in our new system. When things come in, they come in. It says, hey, call a better game tonight, would you? I'll do my best. Last night, Denver saves their season. Jamal Murray goes bananas. Pretty incredible performance in that fourth quarter. He finished with 24 after having a brutal start. Offenses ruled the day. Denver's offensive rating was a 120 last night. San Antonio was a 109.6, which is high. It's about league average. Pop got a terrible technical foul. I got to tell you what. For a guy who's going to go down as the greatest coach of all time, he has more playoff, like, snafu stuff. That was weird. Like, why are you getting that technical foul at that moment in time? This seems strange. But the Nuggets got that one. They were on the ropes, down five at one, down five at end of one, down 10 at the half, down by more as the game progressed, but they were able to get out 21 fast break points last night. Denver got out of the half court, really, really pushed it. Paul Millsap gave them kind of the desperate energy they needed. San Antonio didn't seem to have that same juice. And then Portland last night, that was pretty awesome. You got to love Terry Stotts is doing a hell of a job there. And they didn't even do it in their usual fashion. They only had seven offensive rebounds. Offensive rebounding is usually a key to them. They got help because Russell was terrible. You just can't go 5 of 20 and have 6 turnovers and not be culpable. Right? Like, you really can't. Like, he just gets a pass. Maybe not. It does seem, though, because he plays with such energy and such force, to me, how he plays has become irrelevant. And maybe they'll go back to Oklahoma City and pull things off. But he's 5 of 20. They were minus 27 last night when Russ was on the floor in 37 minutes. Like, at some point, this has got to be, we'll see. If he gets knocked out in the first round of the playoffs again, then you kind of have to, I think, say if he's, and I really do feel as though Russ has been covered up throughout his career by having this other great player on his team. You know, he had his historic year where he wins the MVP for getting a team a little bit over 500 when the year after Durant leaves. But other than that, he's always had these other two stars around him. And then in turn, because he puts up such big numbers, he gets classified as one of the top elite guys in the league. I just can't do that. Like, he had the largest, most negative impact on the offense of any player in the NBA this year. And now his team's 0-2 in the playoffs. And I think that's got to be part of it. They were 5 of 28 from 3 last night. I believe that in every game but one playoff game so far this year, the team that has made the most threes won. I think that's right. That in every game but one so far, the team that has made the most threes won. And that one game was Philadelphia's blowout of Brooklyn, where Brooklyn had 15 and Philadelphia had, I think, 9. But otherwise, I believe that in every game so far, the team with the most threes has won. So I think that, you know, still speaks to the, we can all talk about the value of the mid-range, this, not all these different things, but it also speaks to, you know, you can't be like the Philadelphia 76ers in game one against Brooklyn and have 3 3-pointers. It doesn't work that way anymore. We can't either, frankly. Right? We've got to make shots tonight. All right, that wraps up Locked On Jazz today. I have no idea what happened with the minivan brigade. I've got no answers for you. But if you hear about some minivan something or other in Houston, you'll know where it all started. Have a great day. Thanks very much for tuning in. Part 3 of the Locked On NFL Draft is up. Make sure you grab that Locked On NBA today with